Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
David Cassidy has died of organ failure at 67.
As the star of one of America's most popular TV shows, The Partridge Family, David Cassidy became one of the biggest teen idols the world had ever seen.
It happened overnight.
He just had everything.
The show's famous music catapulted him from a little-known actor to a record-breaking recording artist.
It's really nice to know that a lot of people out there care that much to come out and see you.
He sold tens of millions of records across a showbiz career spanning five decades.
He was as big as the Beatles and Elvis.
Even in his 60s, he was still performing.
You grow up and your fans grow up, and they still loved him.
But in stark contrast to his clean-cut teen idol image, David Cassidy's life led him down a darker path.
Inside, he was ultimately a very troubled man.
He actually said, it's kind of getting out of control.
David Cassidy died of multiple organ failure. Although he suffered a well-publicized battle with alcohol, which can cause organ damage, David claimed to be sober in the years leading up to his death. And after a career spanning 50 years, David was still performing and making music. So why did this seemingly unstoppable man really die at the relatively young age of 67?
World-renowned medical examiner and forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has performed around 5,000 autopsies, collaborating closely with law enforcement and other forensic specialists. His pivotal role in investigating suspicious cases has revealed the truth behind mysterious deaths for over 20 years.
I've got access to biographical information and exclusive first-hand accounts that I'll use to examine David's medical condition. I'll be looking for evidence which explains why David Cassidy died so suddenly at just 67.
March 4th, 2017. B.B. King Blues Club, New York. 8 months before his death. David Cassidy has been in the spotlight for nearly five decades as both an actor and singer. He's recently gone through his third divorce and filed for bankruptcy.
He was wanting to put that behind him. It was a big change in lifestyle for him.
Today, he's preparing to perform a sold-out show on what he's decided will be his last ever tour. David is suffering from laryngitis. But in the face of his recent personal lows, he's determined his performing career should go out on a high.
I only remember one show that he actually canceled because he was sick. The show must go on. He knew his fans loved him, and they'd rather see him with laryngitis than not see him.
Despite ill health, David goes on to give a two-hour performance.
Laryngitis is an inflammation of the voice box and can be caused by a number of things, including viral infection, overuse of the voice, and even acid reflux. But it usually isn't a sign of anything serious and generally clears up within a week. Aside from this minor ailment, David appeared to be in good health, so I need to look further into David's life to discover what caused his death just 8 months later.
David Bruce Cassidy was born in West Orange, New Jersey on April 12, 1950. His parents, Jack Cassidy and Evelyn Ward, were both actors. And from an early age, David knew he wanted to follow in his father's footsteps.
When he was three, he went to the theater and saw his father perform. And he said, oh my gosh, this is what I'm going to do.
At three and a half, David's parents divorced,
his father left the family home and remarried actress and singer Shirley Jones, maintaining little contact with David.
It hurt him deeply. David felt rejected and abandoned for most of his life by his father, you know, waiting for his dad, and he wouldn't show for holidays since he was an only child. He learned how to entertain himself.
If there was anything that put an imprint on his life, that probably was part of it.
As David grew up, he showed little interest in school. And as soon as he graduated, he moved to New York to pursue his dream of becoming an actor. He had some minor success, but his life would change forever when his father's agent secured him an audition for the role of Keith Partridge in a new musical sitcom, The Partridge Family.
When he landed the role, he was surprised to find out that his stepmother, Shirley Jones, was the mom in the family.
You're in some kind of trouble. Maybe I can help you out.
They didn't ask me if I could sing or play. The next thing I knew, I was on the back of cereal boxes, and there were David Cassidy dresses, dolls.
David Cassidy became an overnight sensation within the Partridge Family band.
It was the combination of his looks, that gorgeous face, the floppy hair, and his singing voice. He was the whole package.
I Think I Love You was the first single released by the Partridge Family pop group, and it became a hit. As Cassidy mania erupted across the globe, David's solo career quickly began to overtake the success of the show. And he began playing the show's famous songs to thousands of hysterical fans. His first concert was to over 10,000 people.
There's nothing like the sound of thousands and thousands of young girls screaming, I love you!
He was taking over the music world. They weren't playing the Beatles anymore on the radios. They were playing David Cassidy songs.
But David struggled to shake off the Partridge Family pop persona.
Sort of yearned to be David Cassidy on stage, to show the world that he was a real live person, not just a squeaky clean image of the Keith Partridge. He wanted to be a rock and roll guy on stage.
Despite that, by late 1970, David Cassidy had released 10 albums with the Partridge Family. And 5 as a solo artist, becoming the highest paid, most popular performer in the world, with hits including Daydreamer and Cherish. After the Partridge Family, David experienced a lull in his career. But in the following decades, he successfully recreated himself, appearing in TV series and performing on Broadway and in Vegas.
When he was in Vegas, he said that he did a show a day, and then on Saturday, 2 shows, and on Sunday, a matinee. So he was a real workaholic.
He also successfully relaunched his solo career.
I'm just lucky that I can still do it and that people want to see me do it.
His hits remained so popular that he was still performing them to loyal fans at the age of 67.
Thank you so much.
March 4th, 2017, B.B. King Blues Club, New York, 8 months before his death. During David's performance, he asks fans not to use flash photography because it's affecting his eyesight.
Optical conditions can be a sign of serious organ damage. But looking back at David's medical history, I can see that his aversion to flashes may have another explanation. He had suffered from the eye condition strabismus since childhood. More commonly known as cross-eyed or wall-eyed, strabismus sufferers cannot align both eyes simultaneously under normal conditions.
When I was an infant in my crib, this eye wandered. My brain doesn't use it.
He had an issue with it, and he would kindly ask them not to use the flashes.
It was very bothersome for him. And you can only imagine being on stage, and it's dark, and there's thousands of flash. Yeah, that was a problem for him.
David's strabismus was hereditary. Despite 5 surgeries to correct it, his eyesight was still affected, and he may have suffered blurred or double vision. Although it's unlikely to have played a part in his death, the condition may have masked other warning signs associated with his eventual organ failure, such as eye damage caused by kidney disease. But looking further into David's early life, I can see something else which could unlock the mystery of his sudden death from multi-organ failure at the age of just 67.
It's time for On Patrol Live.
It's a good day for the good guys, bad day for the bad guys.
We're taking you to the streets of America
for an unfiltered look at what police officers do.
He's doing about 120.
Anything can happen when it's live.
Anything can happen.
Anything.
Anything.
Just threw something out right here.
Join the team as we take you on this journey.
On Patrol Live. Every Friday and Saturday night on Reels.
David Cassidy, much-loved star of the Partridge Family, an acclaimed actor and singer, died in the hospital at the age of just 67. Now, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating the events that led to his death.
So far, I've discovered that David Cassidy had been suffering from laryngitis and a long-term eye condition, neither of which likely contributed to his death. But looking into David's early life, I've discovered he experimented with illegal substances, which could have caused serious damage to several internal organs.
As a teenager in the swinging 60s, before he found fame, David was a self-proclaimed wild child.
David certainly experimented with drugs.
He told me that he experimented pretty much with most of them.
David and his friends used a wide variety of mind-altering substances, from psychedelics to amphetamines, barbiturates to marijuana, and on one occasion, heroin.
Drug abuse can have a serious long-term impact on organs, including the liver and kidneys. The liver is responsible for breaking down toxins, which the kidneys then release from the body as waste in the urine. When drug abuse overloads the liver, these toxins remain in the body, causing damage and inflammation. However, the liver has an amazing and unique ability to regenerate by replacing damaged tissue with new cells. The liver has the capacity to completely repair severe damage in just 30 days. And according to personal accounts, David claimed he stopped taking drugs in 1970 after one of his best friends died from an overdose. And in theory, this would have given his liver and kidneys time to heal from any damage caused.
Talked about his friend Kevin in the coffin and saying that could or should have been me in there.
However, it's clear from reports that although David may have halted his use of illegal drugs, he was well known for having abused another drug that could well have damaged his organs, and that's alcohol.
In 1974, as Cassidy mania took hold, David embarked on a world tour, but his superstardom soon became overwhelming.
The band would go and stay in one hotel. David and I, we would stay in a different hotel.
Outside, everybody, because when we go through, there's going to be loads of noise.
The girls could reach him. They would take skin off of him, pieces of clothing, hair, anything.
Eventually, they would find out where he was. So he was kind of trapped in this hotel room.
On the next-to-last night of the world tour, he played at London's White City Stadium to 40,000 screaming fans.
I was there. It was a massive, massive crowd.
So this whole sports arena full of young girls would be shoving up to the front. See all these security guys pulling girls out of the crowd.
And there were stretchers all in the back of the stage with little girls just lying there.
It was kind of like a war zone in a way.
The concert ended in tragedy. At least 650 people were injured, and one 14-year-old girl died in the hospital.
I think just from the excitement of it all, so I've been told, she just had, a heart attack.
It affected him deeply, enough for him to decide to call it quits.
With David already struggling to cope with his fame, the fan's death was the final straw. He retired from performing at the age of just 24.
I think it was a question of necessity for me. I just was emotionally and physically drained.
As soon as he stopped working, David suffered a breakdown.
He was at a very kind of low point in his life, and so he turned to alcohol to block things out.
Just 2 years later, when David was 26, another tragedy struck. As a night of partying came to a close, David heard on the radio that his father, Jack Cassidy, had died in a house fire at the age of 49.
Dental charts were needed for identification.
It was devastating to him.
Especially a parent that he had such a complex relationship with.
David had attempted to form a closer bond with his father throughout his life, but their relationship had remained strained.
The more success that David had, the more his father couldn't cope with the fact that his son had way eclipsed his fame.
There would have inevitably been this sense of regret, if not guilt, of regret of not having had that connection, I think especially for David, who is actually very approval-seeking of his father.
So much was left raw and painful.
David turned to the only coping mechanism he knew.
The liver processes 90% of alcohol consumed. Each time the liver filters alcohol, some of the liver cells die, which ultimately leads to damage. Alcohol also causes changes to kidney function, which renders them less able to filter the blood. Chronic drinking also causes high blood pressure, which is a common cause of kidney disease. And I can see that the connection between David's drinking and his father could have run even deeper.
Alcoholism ran in David's family. His father, Jack, was absolutely an alcoholic. David's grandfather had been an alcoholic, and Jack's brother was also an alcoholic.
Genetics is one of the biggest risk factors for developing alcohol use disorder, or AUD. AUD is a chronic relapsing brain disease characterized by compulsive alcohol use. David had begun to use alcohol in his 20s in response to stress and trauma, but typically, heavy drinking needs to be sustained for at least 10 years for liver failure to develop. So, I need to look into how long his use of alcohol lasted.
By the mid-1980s, David had experienced two short-lived marriages and a number of brief relationships, one of which resulted in the birth of his first child, Katie, but they soon became estranged. Divorce settlements and a series of bad investments left him $500,000 in debt.
He had nothing, and he was turning to alcohol. He actually confessed to having blackouts.
But in 1991, salvation came in the form of a third wife, Sue Schifrin, and together they became parents to son, Beau.
That, to David, was the most wonderful moment of his life when Beau was born.
He wanted to make sure his son got the love he didn't get.
No, you're not listening. What did I tell you?
But despite attempts to remain sober, David continued to battle with his alcoholism. This came to a very public head on November 3rd, 2010, when he was arrested for driving under the influence.
One night on the evening news, I watched a California state trooper pulling David over in the car and giving him a DUI.
Keep going, keep going.
It was hard for us to watch, see his mugshot.
What he does in response to a stressful event is he begins to drink, and this happens time and time again.
By 2014, David had lost his mother to Alzheimer's, gone through his third divorce, and been arrested twice more for drunk driving, which culminated in him spending 90 days in rehab.
That seemed kind of like the first step on the road to sort of recovery, and that he'd kind of got a grip with things.
The one and only David Cassidy.
What was the pivotal moment in your life when you decided, I've had enough?
My son, Bo, when he said to me, I can't have a relationship with you anymore, Dad. I don't know who you are now.
Accepting that you have a problem is fundamental to recovery. All of a sudden, he gets a whole new set of coping strategies.
According to reports, David claimed he managed to get his drinking under control just a few years before he died. However, David's drinking over the years would have certainly done damage to his liver. It's possible that David was unaware of this, as often there are no symptoms of liver damage until the situation is severe. Damage progresses in stages, beginning with the buildup of fats, leading to inflammation and eventually scarring and nodules, also known as cirrhosis. As smooth liver tissue is replaced by scar tissue, it begins to interfere with the flow of blood to and within the liver, causing it to function less efficiently. Recent studies have shown that the liver's unique regenerative ability is so effective that damage may be reversible even when cirrhosis has occurred, if complete abstinence is sustained. So, although David's liver will undoubtedly have been functioning at a reduced capacity, abstinence would have helped his liver begin the slow process of regeneration. So, with David beginning recovery, why did he die just 3 years later?
David Cassidy, star of the hit show The Partridge Family, died of multiple organ failure, surrounded by his family, at the age of 67. Eminent forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating his death.
So far, I've discovered that David abused drugs as a teenager and that he may have had a genetic predisposition to alcoholism. But he went into rehab and claimed he was finally on the road to recovery, which may have allowed his liver time to heal. So I need to look further into David's later life to find out whether something else caused his organs to fail.
David always prided himself on giving great concerts to his fans, but in the year before his death, there was a noticeable change in some of his performances.
On stage, he'd forget lyrics sometimes. They said he was repeating himself over and over. He was talking longer than he normally would.
My father taught me this song when I was 3.5 years old.
Sometimes people would scream, just sing, you know. Might have something to say about that. You know? The patience level wasn't there. It's really out of character.
I can see that 9 months before his death, David publicly announced that he was suffering from dementia. This could account for his memory loss on stage.
What was the first symptom that you noticed?
When friends of yours or family members begin to say to you, remember I just told you this 2 days ago, and there is no memory of it. That's when I began to be very concerned.
He was forgetting a lot of things, and I think that he was very, very upset about it and nervous about it.
Dementia describes a range of progressive conditions that damage the brain's nerve cells. This prevents messages being sent to and from the brain, which in turn stops the body from functioning normally and causes a gradual loss of memory and judgment.
His mother had Alzheimer's, and he was under the impression that something that could happen to him.
According to reports, David believed there was a genetic link, since both his mother and his maternal grandfather had suffered from Alzheimer's-related dementia. There are over 200 subtypes of dementia, and there is no hereditary link in 99% of cases. Dementia sufferers often survive up to 10 years after the appearance of symptoms, but David died within just 9 months of his announcement. On top of this, there is no direct link between dementia and organ failure, so I believe something else was responsible for his death.
September 2017, David's home, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 2 months before his death. David has a fall and injures himself.
I just lost
my balance, and I fell. It kind of really wrecked me.
I heard David had a fall, but he would hit himself a lot.
I'm in a lot of pain, but I never let anything stop me.
Dementia can cause a decline in function, muscle weakness, and impaired balance. It can also affect judgment and visual spatial perception, making the risk of falling greater. Research has found that older adults with dementia are twice as likely to fall as those without the condition. Although dementia may have damaged David's brain and alcohol may have damaged his liver and kidneys, according to reports, there was another disease attacking David's body.
I'm up for trying, baby.
September 17th, 2017, Chicago. 2 months before David's death. David has invited a documentary crew into his life.
Where it comes from.
Days after his fall, he's in the studio, recording a tribute album to his late father.
Night and day.
He was longing for his father, you know, that connection. And he was reflecting on his life.
I can't get it today. I'm sorry.
But David is struggling in the recording session due to pain in his body.
Oh, God. I really would like to do this vocal tomorrow.
Okay.
My body's never been in this much pain.
David's pain could have been the result of his fall days earlier. But reports reveal something else which could have been to blame. I conceive that David suffered from osteoarthritis. This is a common condition that causes pain and inflammation of the joints.
He was complaining about his ankles being swelled. David had arthritis in his hands. He had it in his back.
He's clearly in an awful lot of pain. He talks about the worst pain, you know, it's the worst pain he's had. He's taken six Aleve.
There's no direct link between arthritis and organ failure. However, some painkillers used to treat arthritis can result in organ damage. Naproxen, sold under the brand name Aleve, is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug often prescribed for arthritis. The process of breaking down naproxen creates byproducts that can damage the kidneys in some people. Constant exposure increases toxicity, which can eventually lead to chronic kidney disease. Naproxen has also been associated with acute liver injury, with severity ranging from inflammation with jaundice through to liver failure.
Oh, is there a back to this? Yes.
September 18th, 2017, Chicago. 2 months before David's death. He's back in the studio after cutting the previous day's recording session short.
I'm out.
It's changing fast.
God.
One more time.
There's one more time.
He said, my abdomen is completely swelled.
This is the worst I've ever felt in 67 years.
From reports, David had complained of swollen ankles and a swollen abdomen. Edema is swelling caused by excessive fluid trapped in the body's tissues. It can cause pain and tightness of the skin and most often affects the hands, arms, feet, and legs. Edema can be caused by arthritis or simply by staying in the same position too long. However, edema can also be a sign of a more serious underlying medical condition. When edema occurs in the abdomen, it's known as ascites. Ascites can be caused by many underlying conditions such as pancreatitis, heart failure, kidney disease, cancer, and cirrhosis.
I'm in agony and I'm swollen everywhere, which I don't understand.
He was yellow. He was jaundiced to some degree, you know. We're like, you need to go to the hospital.
No, I'm not waiting in an emergency room. I'm just not.
And we're like, oh, well, David has spoken.
Jaundice occurs when the waste product bilirubin is not being filtered out of the blood properly by the liver and kidneys and is deposited in the skin and eyes. Both jaundice and ascites are warning signs that these organs are not functioning properly. And I can see that David was taking another prescription drug, which could have also been affecting his liver.
He said that he'd been taking Vicodin. He was still in enormous pain.
Vicodin is a strong, highly addictive painkiller with a high potential for abuse. It's made of a combination of hydrocodone, a synthetic opiate, and acetaminophen, a non-steroidal pain reliever. Both drugs are metabolized by the liver, and if the liver is chronically damaged, the toxic byproducts accumulate, causing further injury or even liver failure. Long-term use of acetaminophen can also cause irreversible damage within the internal structures of the kidney, known as analgesic nephropathy, which can result in kidney failure. So at this point, with David's organs already compromised after years of alcohol abuse, I can't rule out David's use of painkillers as playing a role in his death.
September 19th, 2017. North Shore Hospital, Chicago, 2 months before David's death. Unable to finish the recording session, David is in the hospital undergoing a series of tests.
It's likely that David underwent a group of blood tests called liver function tests and imaging studies such as abdominal ultrasound, CT scan, and MRI to assess the extent of any damage to his liver. Could the results reveal why David died just 2 months later?
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is scrutinizing David Cassidy's medical records to uncover why he died prematurely from multiple organ failure.
So far, I've discovered that in addition to David's history of drug and alcohol use, he had taken painkillers with the potential to cause damage to his liver and kidneys.
Late September 2017, North Shore Hospital, Chicago, 2 months before David's death. After spending a few days unconscious in his hospital bed, David comes around and has a consultation with his doctor. In a phone call to the documentary's producer, he later revealed his diagnosis.
I just met with the doctor, and my liver, I have a liver disease. My life has changed dramatically.
He never let on to me how sick he was. Like, I was not aware.
David's history of alcoholism may have meant that he'd been suffering from liver disease for a long time without realizing it. Abstinence from alcohol would have enabled David's liver to begin the process of healing itself. However, if David took high doses of the painkillers Vicodin and naproxen, this could have compromised his liver's regeneration and instead progressed his liver disease even further.
Late September 2017, 2 months before David's death. After receiving his diagnosis, David is keen to leave the hospital in Chicago and return home to Florida.
Craig and I tried to convince him to stay in Chicago. The fact that he chose to leave, personally, I said to myself, he wants to go out in his own way.
October 2017, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 1 month before his death. David's at home. His friends are making contact to check on his health.
Once David left hospital, he kind of just hid away.
You know, I was checking up on him. He said he's working on getting healthy and he'll let me know, kind of like leave me alone a little bit. I had the instinct that David was starting to alienate himself.
At this stage, David's liver disease may have caused him to lose his appetite, feel sick, fatigued, confused, drowsy, and even suffer from fever and shivering attacks.
We know that having social support for the vast majority of illnesses really helps us cope with them, both psychologically but even physiologically. So it seems to me that isolating himself in those last weeks potentially could have had a really negative impact on him physiologically.
November 15th, 2017. Broward Health Medical Center, Fort Lauderdale. 6 days before his death, David is rushed into the hospital.
From reports, David's liver and kidneys had begun to fail. This means these organs are losing or have lost the ability to carry out their normal function. It's a life-threatening condition that demands immediate medical attention.
November 18th. In the hospital's intensive care unit, David is put into a medically induced coma and put on a ventilator.
The induced coma brought on by a controlled dose of barbiturate would have enabled doctors to insert the ventilator's breathing tube to protect David's airways.
Later the same day, David's publicist announced that David had been hospitalized and was in a coma awaiting a liver transplant.
Liver transplantation involves the removal of the diseased liver and replacement with a whole or portion of a donor's healthy liver. A transplanted portion of a healthy liver can grow to normal size within weeks. Patient survival rates for liver transplant are high. After transplant, normal liver function resumes.
November 20th, 2017, one day before David's death. Surrounded by his family in the hospital, David comes round from his coma and remains in a critical but stable condition.
He was pretty much under, but he came to a few times. Most of the time he was medicated and he wasn't real aware and he wasn't real present.
But just a day after David had regained consciousness, his condition deteriorated.
The family were told, look, this is not going to end well and, you know, prepare yourselves.
His body wasn't healthy enough to go through a transplant. It would be too traumatic. It was too frail and too abused.
Liver transplant surgery carries the risk of major complications, including blood clots, bleeding, and especially infection. It's possible that David's condition meant his ability to survive the operation was extremely compromised. On top of this, patients with kidney failure pre-transplant have a poor chance of survival following liver transplantation.
6 days after being rushed to the hospital, 67-year-old David Cassidy dies, surrounded by his loved ones.
David Cassidy has died of organ failure at 67.
Kind of heartbroken to some degree for just having watched him digress.
I couldn't breathe. I needed space. I fell on the ground and just prayed for him.
Following David's diagnosis of liver disease, his condition deteriorated rapidly until neither his liver or kidneys could carry out their normal function. Looking back at David's final few years, I've discovered what was really behind his deterioration and death.
Dr. Hunter believes David was in fact masking a deadly habit. The nation mourned the death of former teen idol David Cassidy on November 21st, 2017. The actor and singer died of multiple organ failure just 3 months after his diagnosis of liver disease. Esteemed medical examiner Dr. Michael Hunter believes he may have discovered what was behind David's rapid deterioration.
In the months before David died, he claimed he was suffering from dementia. But from reports, there may be another explanation for the fact he appeared mentally and physically unstable in the last few years of his life.
How are you?
Because after leaving rehab in 2014, David publicly claimed to be sober.
If I take another drink, I'm going to die. And I'm now working a very serious 12-step program.
But in reality, he was concealing his addiction.
Did he hide it from me? Yeah, he felt guilty and shameful, like all addicts do.
Part of being an addict is trying to manipulate the world around you so you can continue being an addict. And that does oftentimes mean lying.
In a phone call to the documentary's producer, 2 months before his death, David admitted he'd been lying about his drinking.
There is no sign of me having dementia at this stage of my life. It was complete alcohol poisoning. The fact is, I lied about my drinking. I did it to myself to cover up the sadness and the emptiness.
If the memory loss and the slurring of the words is to do with a degenerative brain disease, Well, that's one thing. If it's to do with the fact that he's drinking too much, well, that becomes harder to deal with. Denial is huge for a lot of alcoholics.
By lying or remaining in denial about his drinking, David may have missed crucial warning signs of a condition that contributed to his death. Heavy drinking over several years can cause alcohol-related brain damage, which can produce symptoms similar to dementia. However, I believe David's memory loss may have been caused by a potentially life-threatening condition called hepatic encephalopathy, or HE, which is a common complication of severe liver disease, with subtle signs seen in around 70% of cirrhotic patients. When the liver and kidneys are too damaged to break down and excrete toxins like proteins and ammonia, they build up in the bloodstream. HE arises when these toxins enter the brain, causing swelling, which can result in confusion, forgetfulness, personality changes, slurred speech, slow movement, and even seizures. HE is episodic and can swing from subtle cognitive impairment to deep coma, which could explain both David's memory loss as well as his unconscious state in the Chicago hospital. The cognitive impairment caused by HE also increases the risk of falls, so this could explain David's fall a few months before his death. HE can progress over time and is a sign of a poor prognosis in cirrhotic patients, with survival rates of around 36% 1 year from the onset of symptoms. If David had been open about his drinking post-rehab and sought medical help, his liver disease and possibly HE may have been identified, potentially prolonging his life. Based on David's symptoms, I believe he had chronic or end-stage liver disease, meaning his liver had been failing gradually for a long time, resulting in cirrhosis. David's other symptoms, such as edema of the legs, ascites, and jaundice, are consistent with decompensated cirrhosis, which means the liver is no longer able to carry out its functions efficiently. A person with alcohol-related cirrhosis who doesn't stop drinking has less than a 50% chance of living for 5 more years. David died within just 6 weeks of returning home to Florida after his diagnosis.
Whether he knew he was dying and he wanted to go about that his own way, whether he went down there so he could drink, if he knew he was going to go and he knew his liver wasn't good, what are you going to do?
If David continued to drink and take the painkillers naproxen and Vicodin, he could have caused even more severe damage. Now, patients with liver cirrhosis, the harmful effects of these drugs on the liver and kidneys are even greater. This is because drinking alcohol while taking these drugs makes it harder for the body to remove the toxic byproducts of these potentially harmful substances. David began a pattern of heavy drinking in response to stress and trauma. Despite his attempts to remain sober, the onslaught of a turbulent and traumatic events in his personal life continued, resulting in a repeated pattern of drinking to anesthetize his emotional pain, meaning his liver never had sufficient time to repair itself.
David really tried to give up booze, I think, so many times. The one thing he didn't want to do, and yet he was doing it, and he knew it.
Liver failure brought on by severe alcoholic cirrhosis often leads to kidney failure. This is known as hepatorenal syndrome. It's thought that a loss of liver function causes changes in the circulation that supplies the intestines, altering blood flow to the kidneys, causing them to fail. In some cases, HE can cause the brain to swell so much that the vital centers in the brainstem are compressed, resulting in death. It's possible that as David's liver and kidneys failed and his condition deteriorated, he slipped into a hepatic coma and died. David succeeded in his childhood dream of following in his father's footsteps and becoming a successful performer. But tragically, his life ended up mirroring his father's in more ways than he intended, as his alcoholism took hold.
He was a fun-loving guy who was very talented. And he had a tremendous joy of life.
Somebody who loved music. Somebody who was a very loving human being.
Great singer, a great entertainer, a great performer. I'm sure he'd also like to be remembered as a great dad.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's reelz.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.